other than Iggy? She was determined to leave everything Grady and Edeline had given her. She didn't want any reminders of the people who'd kicked her out of their family. But she decided to tell her friends about it. The thought of everyone's pity made her feel as if an angry imp were tearing around inside her body. But it was time. Dex barely looked at her as he opened his locker, and his whole body radiated tension. She cleared her throat. "Hey, Dex." He didn't turn, keeping one very cold shoulder pointed in her direction. "I'm sorry. I don't blame you for being mad. I know I've been a little distant lately." He reeled around, his face twisted with so much anger she barely recognized him.
"You weren't distant with Fitz and Biana on Friday. I saw you hugging them in the hall."
"Dex, I..." She hadn't realized anyone was around.
"Why would you tell them before me? I thought we were best friends."
"We are."
"Then why did you go home with them after you turned me down?"
"I was going there anyway. And I didn't tell them. They already knew." She took a deep breath, preparing for the next words. "Grady and Edeline canceled my adoption."
"Oh."
He stared at his feet.
"Are you okay?"
She choked back a small sob. The words hurt even more to say out loud. "Not really," she admitted. "But that's why Fitz and Biana knew before you. Alden told them when he asked how they would feel about me living with them."
"What?"
His voice was so loud, half the prodigies in the atrium turned to stare.
"You're going to live with them?"
She leaned closer so he would keep his voice down. "The council still has to approve it, but I hope so."
"You hope so?"
He slammed his locker closed.
"Well, that's just great. You'll be a Vacker."
He said their last name like it was a bad word. "So?"
"So? Vackers aren't friends with Disneys."
"I would be, and Fitz and Biana would be too if you made some effort with them."
"Right."
He kicked the ground.
"I don't get why you'd want to live there anyway."
"For one thing, there aren't exactly people lined up to adopt me." She cleared the bitterness from her voice before saying anything else. "Besides, they're my friends, Dex. I keep waiting for you to get over this prejudice against them. But it's like you want to hate them."
"I don't trust them."
"Well, I do."
"Yeah, because you have a mega crush on Fitz."
"I do not." Blood rushed to her face. He'd said it so loud, everyone giggled. Dex snorted.
"Whatever."
"It's the truth. And why are you being such a jerk? I tell you my guardians are kicking me out, and you pick a fight with me and humiliate me in front of everyone?"
"Maybe if you talked to me first, instead of running to Wonder Boy, I could have helped. But I guess I should get used to that. Once you're living there, you'll ditch me anyway."
"Right now, I kind of want to."
"Good."
"Good." Dex kicked the wall and stomped away. Sophie leaned against her locker, trying to figure out what to feel. Hurt, regret, and anger warred with each other. But anger won. She was in the middle of the biggest crisis of her life, and all Dex could think about was his silly competition with Fitz. It made her want to throw something hard at his head. Instead, she grabbed the illegal necklace from the back of her locker, shoved it in her bag, and stomped to elementalism. Dex avoided her like the plague for the rest of the day, which was fine. She wasn't talking to him until she got a very sincere apology. Maybe with a little begging. And a present. She planned to stop by Everglen to drop off the necklace, but Biana told her Alden and Della were in Eternalia all day, meeting with the council. So she went back to the cave at Havenfield and tried to trigger memories until sunset. Once again, she found nothing. She was up in her room transmitting commands to Aiki, her new, very successful method of training him, when Grady knocked on her door.
Sophie?
He called.
Can you hear me?
Yes. It was the first word she'd spoken to him since their talk. He cracked the door enough to slip his head through, looking more uncomfortable than she felt.
Sorry to interrupt. A package arrived for you.
He held out a small parcel wrapped in brown paper. When she didn't move, he set it on the floor.
I guess I'll leave it here. Good night.
It was easy to hate Grady for what he was doing, but it was also hard. She really did love Grady and Edeline, and she thought they loved her. Her eyes blurred with tears as she tore off the brown paper, unwrapping a silver orb and a note. You must help them, followed by three names. Connor, Kate, and Natalie Freeman. Her hands shook as the silver orb came alive at her touch, the word spy ball glowing across the center. She'd never seen one before, but she'd heard kids talk about them. They could show you anyone, anytime, anywhere in the world. You had to apply for a special permit to have one, and she had no doubt who'd sent her this one. Still, she couldn't resist whispering. Show me Connor, Kate, and Natalie Freeman. Light flashed, and the spy ball displayed three people huddled together. The rest of the world disappeared. Her mom's hair was longer. Her dad looked a little thinner. And Amy looked older. But it was definitely her human family. Three echoes of a life where she thought she didn't belong. But they had loved her, which was more than she had here. She wanted to reach through the orb and touch them, but she had to settle for watching as they huddled on the floor of a crowded room. Why were they on the floor? Her eyes found the words, evacuee center, and she nearly dropped the ball. They'd been evacuated, which meant the fires were near them. You must help them. The note's words rang in her ears, and she tried to shake them away, tried to remind herself she was being manipulated. But she couldn't take her eyes off the three people she'd once loved more than anything. The three people she still loved, looking tired and afraid as a deadly, unquenchable fire threatened them. You must help them. Something inside her clicked into place. Her family never would have abandoned her. She couldn't abandon them. She didn't know how, and she didn't know when, but she would help them. For now, she would stay with them as a silent supporter, watching from afar. 42. Sophie didn't sleep. She barely blinked. The spy ball felt like a magic window that could close any time, and she didn't want to miss a second of seeing her family. Even though she'd tried to forget them, even though they didn't know she existed anymore, nothing could erase the love she felt for them. So when the sun painted the sky pink and gold, she stashed the spy ball in the bottom one of her desk drawers, dug out her imparter, and called Alden.
What happened?
He asked, rubbing the sleep out of his eyes. The fires are near my family, aren't they? He hesitated before he answered.
Yes, but everything is under control. Why are you asking? Did you get another note?
She nodded. It said, you must help them. I know it meant my family. She left out the names and the spy ball. She wasn't ready to give up her only connection to her family. Not after almost 8 months without them.
I don't doubt that's what they meant. But you must remember that they're trying to manipulate you. What better way to do that than to use people you love?
They're in danger, Alden. There must be something we can do.
There isn't. Without evidence, we can't make an accusation. And until that accusation is made, or the fires threaten our cities, the council won't order an investigation. These things take time.
We don't have time.
Yes, we do. Listen, I know you're upset, but promise me you won't do anything. Her jaw set. Promise me, Sophie, so I don't feel like I need to send someone to watch you. Come to Everglen this afternoon, and we'll see if we can't find a solution you're more comfortable with.
She didn't want to agree, but she didn't want a chaperone following her around. Fine.
You promise?
I promise.
Good girl. I'll see you after school.
She stared at the imparter long after Alden's image disappeared. She knew he was right. She was definitely being manipulated. But in all of human history, there had never been a firestorm like this. Global. Deadly. Clearly organized. With bright yellow flames. An elf had to be behind it. Which meant an elf had to stop it. She wasn't going to run to the council like the Black Swan wanted her to. But she couldn't sit back anymore. Someone had to do something. Alden said they needed evidence to make the accusation. She would get it. She didn't know how, but she would find a way. She threw on her uniform and raced downstairs to get Iggy's breakfast so she could leap to Foxfire early. Her plan was to search the libraries for books on evidence laws. She never made it past the front door. Another package. Another note. Another pin. This time, the message was slipped inside a bottle. Her hands shook as she dumped the contents into her palm. The little golden Flaridon pin glinted against her skin, and she examined the details, trying to understand its significance. The note only made her more confused. Left 3, down 10, right 2. You have everything you need. Everything she needed for what? She examined the bottle, searching for another clue she was missing. It was short and round, with a fluted neck and a wide opening. She nearly dropped it when she realized she'd projected the exact shape into her memory log. Fire catching. Luminite and gold. The way to bottle a generated blaze. The way to bottle Everblaze. The Moonlark and Flaridon pin supplied the metals, and she had no doubt the left, down, right directions told her how to use the necklace to leap where the fires were. Paired with the bottle, the gifts gave her everything she'd need to collect a sample of the fire. What better evidence could she provide? But how was she supposed to get close enough to bottle the flame without killing herself? Especially without fire-resistant clothing. Fire-resistant? Gildy was fire-resistant. Probably why they gave her the Flaridon pin instead of a piece of jewelry. They probably brought Gildy to Havenfield. She wouldn't put anything past them at this point. Was she supposed to guide Gildy with her mind to fly through the fire and collect the sample? Was that possible? You have everything you need. The Black Swan seemed to think so, but then she'd be doing everything they wanted her to, breaking several major laws in the process. And she couldn't claim ignorance, like in the Quintessence debacle. This would be willful. They would punish her. Maybe even with exile. A huge part of her wanted to leap to Everglen and tell Alden everything so she couldn't be tempted. The other part wouldn't forget her family huddled on the floor, clinging to each other. Or the article the Black Swan gave her. Firestorm claims first victims. whatever consequences she might pay. It was wrong to let people suffer without trying to help. Tiergen said she would make the right decision if the time ever came. And this was the right decision. She knew it. Before she could change her mind, she grabbed her satchel and ran for Gildy's enclosure. The golden pterodactyl flapped her wings as Sophie entered her cage.
Screech!
It's okay, Sophie transmitted, sending images of glowing flames, hoping to calm Gildy's nerves. Gildy settled on Sophie's wrist as Sophie dug the leaping necklace out of her satchel. Her arm almost collapsed under the weight, but she held strong.
Here goes nothing,
she told Gildy as she counted the facets the way the note instructed. When the crystal locked in place, she took a deep breath, clung to Gildy's feet, and let the cobalt blue light pull her away. The sudden blast of heat made her stagger. She could barely see through the thick smoke, but she could tell she was on a grassy plain, and the fires were in the hills all around her. Gildy screeched and flapped her wings.
Steady,
Sophie told her, transmitting calming images until Gildy settled down.
Stay.
She set Gildy on the ground and took off her cape, tying it across her mouth and nose to filter the smoke. Finally, a use for the thing. She pried the digital displays off the back of the pins, dropped them in the bottle, and created an air seal the way she'd practiced. It took 3 tries to get it right, and it wasn't as thick as the seal Sir Conley made, but it was the best she could do.
Hold,
she told Gildy, sending her an image of how she wanted Gildy to carry the bottle between her talons. Gildy didn't want to obey, but Sophie repeated the command over and over until Gildy flapped her wings, lifted off the ground, and snatched the bottle, holding it upside down, the way Sophie instructed. She wasn't sure if she would be able to keep the mental connection once Gildy flew away, so she repeated the instructions until she felt Gildy understood. Then she gave her a warning.
Danger. Not normal fire. Be fast.
She transmitted images that might explain the threat, and hoped Gildy's survival instincts would guide her through. A sharp blast of wind blew smoke in her eyes, and she pointed to the fire.
Go, Gildy. Remember what I told you. And hurry.
Sophie held her breath as Gildy flew toward the fire line. She tried to watch as her glinting body disappeared into the flames, but the fire was too bright, burning spots of color into Sophie's dry corneas. She closed her eyes, transmitting instructions to Gildy over and over.
Swoop through the thickest part of the flames 3 times and come back.
Thick, raspy coughs heaved through her chest and made it impossible to concentrate enough to locate Gildy. She didn't know how long she'd been waiting, but the heat of the fire was singeing her skin.
Come back, Gildy,
she called. The wind carried her words away. How long was too long?
Gildy, please come back.
The shift in the wind put her in the line of the fire, which meant that if the grass kept burning at its current speed, she'd be overcome by the flames in a matter of minutes.
Gildy,
she screamed. A coughing fit brought her to her knees, making her voice useless. If Gildy didn't return in the next minute or two, she'd have to abandon her and escape. The horrifying realization gave her a burst of adrenaline, and she was suddenly aware of the buzzing energy at the back of her mind. Could she channel it as she transmitted? She closed her eyes and shoved the energy into her mental call.
Gildy, come back now!
She scanned the sky. Nothing. Then a faint glint of gold sparkled through the smoke.
Gildy!
She screamed, waving her arms.
Gildy! Over here!
The gold flash changed course and disappeared into the smoke and flame. Seconds later, the shimmering pterodactyl emerged from the inferno, circled once, and landed at Sophie's feet.
Screech!
Sophie threw her arms around her neck.
Ouch! You're hot, she yelped,
jumping back and thrashing her arms to cool the burn. Gildy's coarse fur looked singed on the edges, and her enormous eyes were clouded and watery. But she seemed okay. Her foot still clutched the bottle, which was filled with tiny yellow beads of sparks and capped with a glowing golden seal.
You did it!
Sophie transmitted images of the treats she would give Gildy as she wrapped the bottle in her cape and tucked it under her arm. Then she pulled out her home crystal, glad she hadn't given it back to Grady and Edeline, and leaped her and Gildy to safety.
What were you thinking?
Grady demanded as he paced the living room. Edeline stayed outside, treating Gildy's scorched fur. She couldn't bear to look at Sophie's burns, and Sophie couldn't blame her after Jolie. She was surprised Grady could stand it. Alden and Elwyn were on their way. This was the one thing she hadn't thought through. She knew she would have to confess what she did, but she'd expected to have some time to practice what she would say. Unfortunately, Grady had been in the pasture, giving Verdi a bath when they arrived. Gildy screeched before she could even think about hiding.
Do you have any idea how much trouble you're in?
Grady asked, tearing his hands through his already disheveled hair. Before she could answer, the front door burst open, and Alden and Elwyn rushed inside.
You promised,
Alden said. His voice was angrier than she'd ever heard.
Just this morning, you promised.
I can explain.
Oh, you'd better, though I'm not sure it will help at this point.
The anger faded from his voice, leaving it flat and empty. Hopeless.
Bronte's calling for a tribunal.
She knew it was coming, but her stomach still contorted in ways that made her very glad she'd skipped breakfast. Elwyn cleared his throat.
Let's treat those burns, shall we?
He squatted next to where she sat, flashing blue light around her arms.
These aren't so bad. I won't even have to use the Yeti pee balm.
Yeti pee?
She gagged as she remembered the stinky gold slime he'd spread on the burn from the stellarscope.
Takes the sting out of the most severe burn. You're welcome.
He spread thick purple balm on all the places where Gildy's scalding fur had touched her skin.
Any other burns you need me to treat?
She shook her head. He plunked two red medicine bottles and a bottle of youth in front of her.
Drink up. This'll fix any damage the smoke did to your lungs.
She swallowed the sticky, sweet serums as Elwyn wiped the balm off her arms, revealing fresh, healthy skin.
Thanks, Elwyn.
He gave her a sad smile.
Yeah, well, I would say stay out of trouble, but I think it might be too late for that.
Her eyes darted to Alden, and her heart sank when she saw his grim expression.
That should take care of her. But if you need anything else, you know where to find me.
Elwyn gave Sophie a look that seemed to say, hang in there. Then he glittered away. Sophie stared at her lap, not sure what to say.
What were you thinking?
Alden demanded.
You said we needed evidence to make an accusation, so I got us evidence.
She pointed to her balled-up cape.
Take a look. It's unlike any of the flames I've bottled in elementalism.
It looked like part of him wanted to keep yelling, but he unwrapped the bottle.
Incredible,
he breathed when he saw the tiny beads of yellow flame. Grady ran his hands through his hair again and turned away.
When the council sees that, they'll have to admit it's Everblaze, she said.
It isn't that easy, Sophie,
Alden told her.
Why?
Because Fintan's their friend?
No. Because you broke the law.
People are dying, losing their homes. My family is camped out in an evacuee center right now, afraid for their lives.
They're human, Sophie. Elves don't get involved in human affairs.
She pointed to the bottle. Obviously, one did. I don't care that he's friends with the counselors. I did the right thing.
I hope so, because there's no way I can protect you from the council. I can.
Grady interrupted, a wild look in his eyes.
Grady?
Alden warned.
No, it's not her fault. It's mine,
Grady shouted.
I mesmerized her into doing it.
The words rang through the room as everyone stared at him. No, you didn't, Sophie argued. I didn't even see you this morning.
You did. You just don't remember, because I told you to forget it.
Desperation filled his tone, begging her not to protest.
Grady, the consequences of that would be even more severe than what Sophie is facing,
Alden warned.
It's the truth. I mesmerized her.
Edeline gasped from the doorway, and all heads spun to look at her.
What are you doing, Grady?
Grady looked away.
I'm telling Alden what I did so Sophie won't have to face a tribunal. I'm the reason Sophie broke the law. I used my ability to make her do it.
No, you didn't, Sophie screamed, launching to her feet. Stop trying to cover for me. I don't need your help.
Please let me do this, Sophie. It's the least I can do, after everything.
A hint of warmth and love was back in his eyes, but she looked away.
I think you should listen to him, Sophie, Edeline stammered.
Each word seemed to steal her strength as she spoke it.
Grady's right.
No, I'm not going to let you lie to the council and risk exile because you feel guilty about dumping me.
It's not about guilt,
Grady whispered. The tenderness in his voice made her throat catch, but she cleared it away. Orlai will know you're lying.
I can be a very convincing liar.
Yeah, I've noticed. He sank into a chair.
I'm trying to make things right, Sophie. This is not the way, Grady,
Alden interrupted. He stared at the bottle of yellow sparks.
Maybe when they see this, they'll decide her actions were justified. You know Bronte will never let that happen,
Grady argued.
We'll worry about that once we see how the council reacts to this new evidence. In the meantime, Sophie has been ordered to act as though nothing happened. The official story is that you stayed home sick today, and they expect you back at school tomorrow.
Alden sighed and turned to Sophie.
I'm not sure how the Black Swan convinced you to do this, Sophie. But can you promise me you won't do anything else they ask you to do?
I promise.
I'm going to try to believe that.
I'm really sorry, Alden. I won't break another promise.
I hope not.
She stared at the floor. I understand if you want to take back your adoption offer. Edeline made a strangled sound.
Sophie, we'd be honored to have you live with us.
He looked at Grady and Edeline.
Sorry. I've been trying to figure out how to tell you.
Grady glanced at Edeline, then at the floor.
No, that's great. I'm glad to hear it.
Edeline choked out something unintelligible. It might have been her agreeing, but it was hard to tell. She turned and fled before anyone could ask her. Alden sighed and held up the bottle.
I should bring this to the council. Get this process going. We'll worry about adoption concerns if...
He didn't finish. But Sophie knew what he meant. If she wasn't exiled. 43.
Acting normal at school the next day was easier than Sophie thought it would be. Dex still wasn't speaking to her. Mirella and Jency were relatively oblivious. And Fitz and Bianna already knew. She got a little choked up when Bianna hugged her and told her things would be okay. And Keith made a few jokes about what he kept calling her mystery illness. But other than that, it was like any other day. Until study hall. Sophie was sitting alone with Bianna, ignoring the way Dex kept glaring at her from the next table over, when Stina plunked her beanpole body in one of their empty chairs.
"I never knew you were such a good actress," she sneered.
Sophie froze.
What do you mean? Not you, Foster. You're not good at anything. I meant Bianna. I know your secret.
Bianna glared at her. Oh, I'm really scared.
You should be.
Something about Stina's confidence seemed to get to Bianna because she shifted in her chair, and her eyes darted to Sophie.
She doesn't know anything. She's just trying to trick you into admitting something.
Sophie grabbed her things and stood.
Come on, let's sit somewhere else.
Stina slammed her bony arm across Bianna's books.
Oh, but I do know something. See, since you've been ignoring Maruka lately, she and I have become quite close. And she's had some great stories to tell. This morning, she told me the most interesting thing about the reason you and Sophie became friends.
All the color drained from Bianna's face.
What is she talking about? Sophie asked quietly.
Stina flashed a wicked smile at Bianna.
Should I tell her? Or do you want to do it?
Tell me what? Bianna sat pale and lifeless, like a statue. Stina giggled.
It's really quite funny. She was forced to be friends with you. Her dad wanted to keep a closer watch on the freaky human girl who practically killed his son in a splotching match. So he ordered Bianna to be your friend so you'd come around their house.
Sophie saw the panic in Bianna's eyes and felt a little sick.
Is that true? Of course it's true, Stina interrupted. She hated you before that, remember? Did you really think she suddenly wanted to be best friends for no reason?
She studied Sophie closely.
I guess you did. You're even dumber than I thought.
Bianna sprang to life and reached for Sophie's arm. Sophie jerked away.
Don't.
Her mind was spinning, making connections she should have made a long time ago. She'd wondered if someone put Bianna up to it. She'd just never considered it might be Alden.
Sophie, Bianna pleaded.
Sophie shook her head as a traitorous tear pricked her eyes. The last thing she saw was the look of "I told you so" on Dex's face as she turned and fled. She raced around a corner and plowed straight into someone.
Sophie, are you okay? Fitz asked.
Of course she would run into him. And he was with Keith. Perfect. I'm fine, she muttered, resisting his help as she struggled to regain her balance.
Hey.
He grabbed her arms.
What happened? What's wrong?
She shrugged out of his grasp and tried to push by, but he blocked her path.
Let me go.
Tell me what's going on first.
Fitz.
Keith tapped him on the shoulder.
I'm feeling some pretty serious rage right now. It's probably not a good idea to annoy her.
She glared at Keith, and he took a step away from her, holding out his hands in peace.
Tell me what happened, Fitz pleaded.
The concern in his voice pushed her over the edge.
Ugh!
She screamed, shoving away from him.
Just stop already.
Stop what?
Stop pretending like you care. I know your dad put you up to it, okay?
That's crazy.
Keith looked at Fitz to back him up. Fitz looked away, his whole body rigid.
What did Bianna tell you?
Nothing, she hissed. Neither of you had the decency to be honest with me. I had to hear about it from Stina.
Fitz muttered something under his breath.
Sophie, I don't want to hear it.
Her voice cracked.
Better leave her alone,
Keith said, pulling Fitz away. He glanced over his shoulder as he dragged Fitz down the hall, his eyes asking if she would be okay. She shook her head, pulled out her home crystal, and leaped back to Havenfield.
What happened?
Grady called when he spotted her, but she didn't acknowledge him. She threw her satchel on the ground and ran straight for the caves.
Sophie!
Wait! Adeline called. Sophie kept going, but Adeline was faster than she looked, and in a minute she'd caught up with her. She offered a small furball.
In case you need a friend.
Iggy fluttered to her shoulder, and Sophie wiped away a tear.
Thanks.
Adeline nodded.
Be careful down there. Looks like a storm's coming.
Sophie hadn't noticed the gray sky, but it seemed appropriate given her mood. She climbed down the cliff and wandered deep into the cave, reveling in the thick, gloomy darkness. She noticed a shard of rock on the ground and hurled it at the wall. The clatter as it shattered into smaller bits was oddly soothing. She threw another stone, and another, relishing the clang of each as they were pulverized to smithereens. When there were no rocks left, she kicked the edge of the nearest boulder until her foot throbbed. Dirty, panting, and in more than a little pain, she collapsed to the ground, feeling the tears she'd been holding back bubble over. She buried her face in her hands and gave in to them, letting the violent sobs shake her body. She felt Iggy trembling next to her, frightened by her irrational behavior. But she didn't care. Her life had officially fallen apart. She had no friends, no family, facing exile and expulsion. She was totally and completely alone. It was at that moment, when she thought things couldn't possibly get any worse, that they did. A pair of arms pulled her to her feet and smothered her scream with a meaty hand. She tried to fight back, but a cloaked figure swooped out of the shadows and shoved a cloth over her mouth and nose. Something sickeningly sweet burned her throat and nostrils, and her head instantly clouded. A sedative. She held her breath and kicked with all her might, but she couldn't escape the iron grasp. And she couldn't hold her breath much longer.
Sophie,
Dex called, his voice echoing against the walls.
Are you in here? Fitz told me I should come find you.
The figure holding her cursed, and Sophie rallied her concentration.
Run, Dex, she transmitted.
She was too late. She heard the scuffle, but her head was swirling too much from the drug to make sense of it. Then the arms holding her jerked away, and she crumpled to the ground, as someone yelped. A ball of fur scuttled away.
Iggy, he must have bit her captor. Go get help, she transmitted, hoping he understood what she meant.
He scurried out of the cave, so she took that as a good sign. She tried to get up, but she was too weak. One of the figures grabbed her arm, squeezing so hard it cut off her circulation.
Let go, she rasped,
surprised at how the drug affected her voice. Dex moaned behind her, and she turned toward the sound. A third figure had Dex with a vice-like grip, and clearly no amount of struggling or fighting would help him escape. She held Dex's panicked stare as her captor pulled her to her feet and covered her mouth with his hand.
"Drug them now,"
he ordered in a deep voice.
"Both of them?"
the figure holding Dex asked.
"I thought we only wanted the girl." "We can't leave any evidence."
He turned to the second figure, who was already soaking the cloth with a small vial.
"You said she only came here alone." "She does."
They'd been watching her. She watched in horror as the figure covered Dex's mouth and nose with the drugged cloth. His eyes held hers as he struggled against the sedative. But after a minute, his head lolled and his body fell limp.
"Get his pendant,"
the one holding her ordered. There was an ominous snap as Dex's registry necklace came free in his hand. Then he returned to Sophie, holding the cloth over her face.
"Let's try this again."
Her nose burned and her head spun, and the last thing she felt was a tug on her neck as her pendant, her only hope of being tracked down and rescued, was ripped off her neck. 44. Sophie drifted in the darkness, unable to separate nightmare from reality. But the pain pulled her back to consciousness. Cold, thick cords sliced into her wrists and ankles. Bonds. She was a hostage.
"They ordered a search and rescue,"
a strange voice whispered from far away.
"They believed the tidal wave."
"Staging a suicide would have been better,"
someone else hissed.
"No one would have believed they both jumped."
"I know. The boy is an unfortunate complication."
Two men, or maybe three. She couldn't tell. She wasn't even sure she was awake. The mental fog felt so thick, she could barely think through it.
"What are we going to do with them?"
he asked.
"We're not here to answer your questions,"
a new voice hissed, a ghostly whisper.
"Just do your job and wash the girl's recent memories."
"Please," Sophie thought, scrambling to make her muddled mind concentrate. She transmitted as far and wide as she could.
"My name is Sophie Foster. If anyone can hear me, please send help."
She listened for a reply, but there was only silence as the darkness swallowed her again. Loud voices yanked her out of the haze. She wanted to cry, but she didn't have the energy. Her body felt like one giant bruise. At least the pain meant she was still alive.
"Funerals are being arranged." "They didn't care that there were no bodies?" "They found the pendants at the bottom of the ocean. Everyone believed."
"No," her brain screamed. "We are not dead. Please, someone hear me. We need help."
"Have they decided what to do with the boy?"
"They have to get rid of him."
"Please," she transmitted. "Please help us." She pushed the message as far as it could go.
"The girl's awake. I can hear her transmitting for help."
A strong hand squeezed her arm like a vice.
"Stop it, Sophie. Do you hear me?"
"Relax. She can't reach anyone from here."
"I don't care. Knock her out."
Sharp sweetness tickled her nose, and she sank into the dark oblivion. Time lost its meaning in the blackness. Each second felt like the next, until a burning in her nose jerked her back to reality. She wanted to sneeze and gag with every breath.
"Are you sure this is necessary?"
The voice loomed over her.
"It's either this or give up."
A very loud sigh.
"I hope you know what you're doing."
Her chest constricted, heaving into a cough. But a cloth blocked her mouth, keeping the cough in. Her body thrashed in pain.
"The gag is choking her."
"She'll live."
A gruff voice insisted.
I don't want her talking. This better work,
someone else added. The choking grew worse, and she started hyperventilating.
Wonderful. Well, go ahead, before she suffocates.
It felt like they pulled off her lips when they ripped the gag away. Her throat was dry, and a sick, sour taste coated her tongue. But the cool air felt wonderful. She gulped as much as she could, coughing and hacking until her chest calmed down.
Don't even think about screaming, Sophie. No one will hear you. And you will not like how we'll punish you. Nod, if you understand.
Her head felt like lead, but she managed a couple weak nods.
Good. Now let's get this over with.
Rough hands pressed against her temples, squeezing her already throbbing head. Why? She croaked. She tried to open her eyes, but something covered them. Why are you doing this?
You've served your purpose,
a ghostly whisper hissed.
Now alter her memories so we can relocate her.
She held her breath, wondered if she would actually feel her memories being stolen, if it would hurt, but she felt nothing.
Is it working?
The gruff voice demanded. Silence, followed by an exhausted grunt.
No.
The single syllable echoed through the room. Something heavy hit the wall. Then a sweet cloth pressed over her mouth, and the drugs pulled her back to the darkness.
Wake up, Sophie,
someone called through the swirling mist of her mind. Her nose stung again. Then the coughing started. She wasn't gagged this time, but her eyes were still covered and she was strapped to a chair, bound by her wrists and ankles.
Who are you?
She whispered, struggling to pull her mind from the haze of the drugs.
That's not important,
the ghostly whisper informed her. Shivers tickled down her spine.
What do you want?
Me?
Oh, many things. Would you like me to list them all?
His voice was hollow, empty. She wished she could recognize it, but she'd never heard it before.
What do you want from me?
Ah, see, that's much more specific.
He laughed an eerie, breathy laugh, more like a wheeze.
I want to know why you're here.
You tell me, she spat. You're the one who captured me.
Oh, I didn't mean here. I meant why you exist at all. Why anyone would go to so much trouble to create such a unique little girl. And what are they hiding in that impenetrable little brain of yours?
Venom seeped into the last words as hot hands brushed against her temples, leaving a trail of warmth everywhere they touched.
I don't suppose you'd be willing to tell me what you're hiding in there.
Get your hands off me! Another breathy laugh.
You've got gumption. I'll give you that. But you leave me in quite a predicament.
Steady footfalls told her he was pacing.
The easiest thing to do would be to kill you and your little friend and be rid of you both. But it's never easy, is it? Sure, it is with your friend. He'll be disposed of soon enough.
Why? It's me you want. Why don't you let him go?
Cast suspicion on your disappearance. No. Can't have that. Don't worry. He won't feel a thing. I'm not a monster, after all.
You're worse than a monster, she screamed. You kill innocent children, and don't even have the guts to show your face.
Innocent?
innocent? She could feel his hot breath on her face and pressure squeezing her arms.
You're so innocent. How did you know the location of Elementine? How do you know about Everblaze?
He released her arms, and the blood rushed back in a throb of pain.
No, Miss Foster. You may be ignorant, but you are certainly not innocent. The Black Swan made sure of that.
Wait, aren't you part of the Black Swan? He laughed, louder this time, almost a cackle. Apparently, that was all the answer she would get.
So what do I do with you?
He asked, mostly to himself.
Do I keep you here so I can see what you can really do?
I can't do anything, she screamed. I'm not special. I'm just me.
Ah, but that's where you're wrong. You're their little puppet. So maybe I should just get rid of you and take their precious toy away.
Panic made her shake despite the bonds. Would he kill her now?
You'll never get away with this, she whispered. I already gave the council the sample of Everblaze. They'll come for you.
How will they know it was me?
Because you're the only one who can ignite Everblaze.
Am I? And I suppose you think you know who I am.
You're Fintan, he laughed.
I guess you've got it all figured out then.
He rushed her, gripping her arms again.
Tell me what your mind is hiding, and maybe I'll let you live.
She screamed as the burning increased, like her skin was melting. Please, you're hurting me. His breath was hot on her face.
This is your last chance.
Please.
She tried to concentrate so she could send out one last desperate call for help. She had no idea if she could reach anyone, but it was her only hope. Her mind buzzed with a reserve of energy as she pictured Everglen until it was all she could see.
Fitz,
she transmitted, imagining him inside, eating dinner in the dining room. It seemed so real she could see his beautiful eyes widen in surprise.
Please, Fitz, I need your help. If you can follow my voice, please find me.
But you're dead, he thought, his face twisting with pain.
I'm not dead, yet. Please, they're going to kill us.
She's transmitting again,
someone warned. The pain in her arms became so unbearable, she lost her connection.
If it had even been a connection.
Is that true?
The ghostly voice hissed as his hands squeezed tighter, twisting her raw skin.
Stop, she screamed, contorting from the pain. Stop, please.
Knock her out again. And make the poison. I'm done with both of them.
No, please.
The sweet cloth blocked the rest of her plea, and she was jerked back to the dark. Her mind swam through a pool of thick, inky black for an eternity. Sometimes she could find the clarity to picture Fitz's face and send another desperate plea for help. But most of the time, she just drifted. Feeling the rise and fall of her chest, and wondering which breath would be her last. At first, she didn't realize she was moving. A rush of air across her face brought her to her senses.
Don't struggle, Sophie,
someone commanded as she tried to twist her body away.
I'm getting you out of here.
A rescue? She couldn't feel the bonds anymore. And a strong pair of arms was moving her somewhere. Her overwhelming happiness only lasted a second. Dex, she grunted, her voice thick and raw.
I'll come back for him.
No,
She twisted to break free. They were both getting rescued.
I have to get you out of here, Sophie.
No! She kicked her legs and almost managed to slip out of his grasp. His sigh rocked through his body.
You kids are so difficult.
Something tugged at her memory, but she didn't have time to process it. Dex, she insisted, thrashing harder. He made a sound that may have been a growl as he spun her around, jostling her more than he probably needed to as he ran. When they stopped, he shifted his weight and pulled a body over his other shoulder. Her heart leaped when she felt Dex's warm breath against her cheek. He still seemed drugged, but he was alive, and they were being rescued. Everything would be okay.
Hang on to me,
the rescuer ordered.
If I have to carry two of you, you have to pull some of your own weight.
Her brain still felt foggy from the drugs, and her body was weak. But there was no way she was going to risk having him put Dex down. She wrapped her arms around his neck and held on with everything she had. He moved quick and silent, occasionally stopping to catch his breath. Then they entered some sort of elevator, and her stomach lurched from the sudden jump in altitude.
Who are you? She whispered.
It's not important.
His voice sounded clipped, giving her nothing distinct she could recognize.
Why are you helping me?
It's my job.
His job?
She'd been hoping it was someone who cared, but she wasn't in a position to complain.
How long have we been gone?
It took us 10 days to find you.
10 days in that drugged delirium?
Her whole body started to shake. The doors opened, and a burst of fresh air on her skin helped calm her panic. After a few minutes of running, he lowered her to the hard ground, laying Dex beside her. Rough fingers parted her lips.
Swallow, he ordered, pouring something bitter and salty down her throat. She gagged, but he clamped her mouth shut. Swallow, Sophie!
She choked down the sludge. A minute later, she heard Dex gag and knew he must be getting the same medicine.
Okay,
their rescuer grunted, placing something flimsy in her hands.
The medicine will take about an hour to work, and then you'll be back on your feet. That's the best I can do. You kids will have to take care of yourselves from here on out.
What? She couldn't even open her eyes. How was she supposed to take care of herself? Don't go, she begged, fumbling to find him.
I've been here too long as it is. If you don't make it back in a few days, I'll try to figure something else out. But I can't make any promises.
Tears pricked her eyes. Please don't leave me, she begged, reaching out for him and finding only air. He was gone. Too weak and scared to move, she curled closer to Dex and cried harder than she'd ever cried before. After a minute, she felt a warm tingle in her mind, almost like a caress. Suddenly, she was 5 years old again, before her telepathy manifested and her life changed forever, when she was just a happy, normal girl. She wrapped her mind around the feeling, clinging to the warmth and safety, until her weary mind drifted off to sleep.
45. Sophie had no idea how much time passed before she forced her eyes open, ignoring the searing light. The warm feeling she'd fallen asleep to was gone, replaced with a heightened awareness of everything around her. Maybe it was from being bound and gagged for so long, or the way the drugs had limited her abilities. But everything felt like sensory overload. It wasn't quite as bad as waking up in the hospital the first time her telepathy started, but it was close. She grabbed her head and moaned, wishing she had the strength to shield the barrage of sound. They were in a city of some sort, a human one, based on the noise and the cigarette butts on the ground, in a deserted alley. The buildings looked like they belonged to a different century, and everything was stone.